Okay, well, we're talking about aspirin this week, and Sarah mentioned aspirin was touted originally as a treatment for pain, but 100 years on, we now know that it's actually a lot more powerful than that. Peter Rothwell is Oxford University's Professor of Clinical Neurology, and he's with us to discuss what else aspirin can do. Hello, Peter.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us on The Naked Scientist. So tell us, what else can aspirin do apart from be a very good painkiller?
Well, as you say, it's still a good painkiller, and a lot of people use it for that reason, particularly patients with migraine, for example. But it's probably used more widely now as what's called an antiplatelet drug or an antithrombotic drug to reduce the risk of blood clots, particularly in people at risk of heart attacks and strokes. As your piece earlier suggested, it was realised slowly in the 1950s and 60s that people that took aspirin regularly seemed to have a lower risk of recurrent heart attacks in particular. And then it was found that the mechanism of this was by inhibiting platelets, which are one of the crucial cells that form blood clots. And therefore, people started to do clinical trials in the 1970s to see whether, in randomised trials, it really would be effective in preventing heart attacks and strokes. And generally speaking, these have all been positive. It reduces the risk of a stroke or a heart attack, if you've had one already, by about a third.
It's quite surprising that someone made the observation that the aspirin users were having fewer heart attacks and strokes, because they didn't initially suspect that might be the case, so they wouldn't have been looking for it.
No, it's one of those fortuitous observations, as things often are in medicine. In fact, it was a very far-sighted general practitioner that noticed in his patients.
It's a bit like the cure for smallpox, I suppose, the vaccine for smallpox, which was another GP, Edward Jenner in that case. So tell us a bit about how aspirin actually works. How is it doing what it's doing, both to cure a migraine, as you mentioned, but also to do these other things to stop blood clotting quite so keenly?
Well, in relation to blood clots, what it does is inhibit the process, where one of the processes whereby platelets become activated. Of course, we've all got platelets going around in our blood all the time, and for the most part, they don't become activated. But when they come across various stimuli, such as collagen, they become activated and clump together and form a blood clot. And one of the mechanisms that this happens is via an enzyme called cyclooxygenase, which is part of the pathway that synthesizes prostaglandins. And aspirin irreversibly inhibits the cyclooxygenase enzymes and therefore blocks that particular pathway. The platelets still work via other pathways, but they just work less effectively.
What about the side effects, though? Because as we heard from Sarah's history piece just now, people had realised that there were these chemicals in nature. They took them from meadowsweet and willow bark and things, which were very good at taking away the painful problem. Presumably, they're also going to have some of this antithrombotic effect, but they also had the side effect of making people have very bad stomach ache. So why does aspirin not do that as much as salicylate, but still nonetheless does cause a problem?
Well, it still does it, unfortunately, and there are essentially two mechanisms involved. One is that the antiplatelet effect itself means that when the stomach lining is damaged, you're more likely to bleed. But in addition to that, aspirin does seem to inhibit the healing process that maintains the endothelium, as it were, the protective surface of the stomach lining.
I see. So, apart from the fact that it does stop blood from clotting and has had a very dramatic effect on strokes and also on heart attacks, saving literally millions of lives, how is it now emerging that it's doing all these other things? Because, you know, the benefits don't stop there, do they? As we've alluded to, there are benefits for cancer and also potentially for dementia.
Well, certainly the benefits for cancer are becoming more clear-cut. I think there's still a lot of uncertainty about whether it has a beneficial effect for dementia, but it's certainly a possibility. What's clear is that the effect of aspirin, particularly on this COX-2 enzyme system, occurs in most tissues that express the enzyme, which is the majority of tissues in the body. And so, therefore, it has a broader anti-inflammatory effect. In fact, that's one of the mechanisms it works in terms of reducing fever and reducing pain. It's an anti-inflammatory drug. And inflammation is a very important process in the development of several diseases, including cancers. And so it's looked for two or three decades now as though, from the epidemiology, aspirin potentially could prevent at least some of the more common cancers. And in recent years, people have now followed up patients who were in trials of aspirin many years ago to see whether there is any evidence of reduced risk of cancer. And over the last year, several studies have shown that, in fact, that's the case.
And does the same mechanism apply probably, if it's going to, in the anti-dementia protective effect?
Certainly there's a link between inflammation and dementia, inflammation and depression and certain other neurological diseases. So one might expect an anti-inflammatory effect to have some benefits in terms of neurological diseases. But there are a whole host of other things that aspirin does which could also be involved, and it's not clear if there is an effect what the mechanism is.
Do you have any feeling, Peter, for when someone should start to take aspirin? At what age would you need to initiate it in order to get all these benefits, or is that a very hard question to answer?
It's hard to be absolutely certain about it for an individual. I think what we can say is that the risk of heart attacks and strokes, which is obviously one of the things you're trying to prevent, increases with age. And when you get into your mid-50s, particularly if you have a family history or any other risk factors, trials have already shown that the benefits of aspirin in terms of prevention of heart attacks and strokes outweighs the risk of bleeding. It's just that it's a relatively small benefit for the individual. But the more recent data showing that aspirin also reduces the risk of death due to several common cancers, when added to that existing benefit, really does tend to push things towards significant benefit. The complication is that the risk of bleeding increases with age. And so when you get to your mid-70s, certainly the risk of bleeding probably outweighs the benefit. So one might argue that people should consider taking aspirin from the age of about 50 to 75.
Because there was a paper that was published a year or so ago from the group in Edinburgh, and they were actually saying that quite a few people do actually self-treat with aspirin. They've just read the newspaper reports in various publications saying that aspirin has all these beneficial effects. They've therefore put themselves on it. And they were saying, actually, the balance is that it could be bad to do that because the people who don't need it will be doing it equally alongside people who do need it. And so one could balance out the other. And there'll be some people who will suffer at the hands of taking aspirin they didn't need. There will be others who do benefit a bit.
That's absolutely right. And there's, as always with self-treatment, it often tends to be the fairly health-conscious people that think about taking aspirin, and often they're the people with a relatively low vascular risk because they don't smoke, they have few other risk factors, they exercise regularly, have a good diet. So it is a question of balancing the risks and the benefits. But once you get into your 50s, certainly your 60s, if you have one or two vascular risk factors, then usually you're into that group where the benefit will outweigh the risks, certainly for preventing heart attacks and strokes. And then when you add on the reduction in deaths due to fatal cancers, it does push things in that direction for a lot of people.
And what about if someone's on an aspirin-like drug, which isn't aspirin, and I'm thinking things like ibuprofen, if they've got some aches and pains? It works very similarly to aspirin, doesn't it? Does it also confer the same risk benefits in all of these other things that you've outlined?
It's a good question. It doesn't seem to so well, at least, for prevention of heart attacks and strokes. But it may well have the drugs like ibuprofen and other non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs may have similar benefits for cancer. We don't have hard data from randomised trials, but the epidemiology suggests the effects may be similar for cancer.
Peter, thank you very much. That's Peter Rothwell. He's the Professor of Clinical Neurology at Oxford University. And incidentally, we'll be finding out later in the programme how painkillers know how to hit pain where it hurts. So stay tuned for the answer for that one. Catch.